was very lucky to hear from our tag and last year at the show of, so I used to share, but I got to hear many more, and I know it's a massive privilege to be able to hear from you. So without further ado, thank you, Ralph.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ariel, for all your work in putting this year together. It's nice to see so many people coming to this year, Erev Shavuos. So, Ashrecha v'tov lechem. I see some people in the gush. Ben, I see you. You're hiding out there in the gush. I'm going to actually put my... I'm going to speak into the microphones. I'm going to put the jack into the computer, so I won't be able to hear anything. But if anyone has a question, please either raise your hand or ask Ariel and put it on the chat, and I'll take it out and be able to listen to the question, okay? So this will make for a better recording quality. I just won't be able... I don't think I can hear you if I put this jack in. Okay. So unlike most mitzvos, when we study Torah, we recite three brachas. Typically, we recite only one bracha. Somehow, the levels of experience of Torah are so striated and so multifarious that one bracha can't capture it. And not only are the brachos diverse, but the language is very elongated. Typically, a berachas mitzvah has what we would call a very... Do you hear me? My internet connection isn't great here. Okay? So typically, a berachas mitzvah has a... Ariel, can you control the waiting room, or do I have to control the waiting room? Ariel?
Yeah, I've got the waiting room.
Okay, so I can just give the share. Okay, normally the syntax of a berachas mitzvah is very, very short and brief, very compact. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu leishev basuka. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu laniach tefillin. So there's either a definition of the mitzvah prefaced by a lamed, or sometimes there's a definition of the mitzvah prefaced by an al netilas yadayim, al mitzvahs, al achilas matzah. Not only the berachas Torah multiplied by three, but the language is very different. The first bracha is pretty classic, lasak v'divrei Torah, but the other brachas are much more floral, much more verbose. So somehow the berachas Torah, both in their diversity and in their abnormal syntax, I meant to capture the fact that unlike every other mitzvah, encountering the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is unique. It should be experienced at multiple layers and levels. And only by that multi-layered experience can we really absorb the totality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. It's not like a lulav. A lulav is one-dimensional, or it's cut to human size. Torah is entering the world of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and entering that world requires many, many different compartments of human identification. The Gemara says, source number two, not the Gemara, there's a pasuk in Yirmiya. Mi ha'ish ha'chacham. Does everyone have the source sheet, Ariel? I'm sorry?
We normally share it during the show. Would you like me to share it with the
Gemara? I'll share it. Let me see if I can just get it out for a second. Okay. Ariel, maybe if you could also post it to the chat if they want to have it on their own. Okay, I'll share it so this I can highlight. So Yirmiya says, Mi ha'ish ha'chacham, v'yavin, this is source number two, v'yavin azos v'asher diber pi Hashem elav v'yagida, alma avda ha'aretz nisisa, alma avda ha'aretz nisisa kamidbar mibli over. Follow my scroll. Why was Eretz Yisrael destroyed in particular in the first Beis HaMikdash? What was so criminal? So we would think the crimes were very, very severe, very austere crimes. A lot of murder, a lot of promiscuity, a lot of idolatry. But Yirmiya asks an open-ended question, as if even those sins could have been tolerated by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says, source number three, Amar Vihuda, Amar Rav Shelo Birchu Batara Tchila. Even though they studied Torah, and the study of Torah was very widespread during the first Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says that they interviewed little children from the north to the south, and they were experts in all the intricate halachos. But by not reciting a bracha on Birchas HaTorah, their attitude towards Talmud Torah was off. And without the proper attitude, Torah can become very dangerous sometimes, very counterproductive. So let's study Birchas HaTorah on the eve of Shavuos. and try to use each bracha as a prism or a portal to better understand some of the attitudes towards Talmud Torah when we study Torah. The first bracha of Birchas HaTorah, source number one, Asher Kiddushanu v'mitzvos v'tzivanu, at least the way Ashkenazim recite the bracha, and I'm giving this shir primarily to those who follow the Ashkenazi nosach, La'asok b'divrei Torah. So as I mentioned before, this bracha is the most conventional syntax. La'asok, leishev basuka, laniach tefillin. But yet the word la'asok is very, very intriguing. It's very provocative. Why doesn't the bracha read as we'd all expect it to read, Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu lilmod divrei Torah? Why the shift from la'asok b'divrei Torah to lilmod, or from lilmod to la'asok? So I think the word la'asok captures three or four different ideas. On the one hand, the word la'asok means work and toil. And Torah is not an endeavor that can be engaged in lightly or in a relaxed fashion. You wake up late in the morning, you want to attend a Zoom share with your cup of coffee, with your latte. Obviously, just kidding. All right, to drink latte. I don't see anyone who is or isn't drinking. Don't worry, I'm not looking at anyone. But it takes every shred of human effort and human commitment for two reasons. First of all, on a moral plane, because this is the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you want to understand the word of the Rabbeinu Shalom, it should demand work and labor and toil and effort. But it's not just morally that it's the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the fear and the reverence and the piety means you don't learn in a casual, relaxed sense, but you're driven and devoted and you work hard and you stay up late and you learn when you're tired and you learn when you're dizzy and you... But also intellectually, it's unlike any other field of knowledge. It's infinite and it's networked and it's circular. And if you don't understand all of Torah, you don't have a chance to understand any part of Torah. Okay, we're human beings. We can just process, we can just parse information. But Hashem is undivided. There's nothing divisible about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Unlike anything in our world, the material in our world, our identity is divided, conscious, subconscious, we have different parts of our identity. Hashem is indivisible. When we say Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, we don't just mean that He's unique and exclusive, we mean He's indivisible. And similarly, Torah, at a human level, we have to study one part and one daf and one page and another page, but it's all Hashem's ratzon, and it all makes sense only if it's integrated. So that's why a very famous Rashi we read 2 weeks ago, probably one of the most famous Rashis in the Torah, when Parshas Bichlokosai begins, Im Bichlokosai Teilechu, that's Mitzvosai Tishmeru V'asisem Osam, source number four. So Rashi says, how do you fulfill Bichlokosai Teilechu, source number five? Shetiyu Ameilim Batara. Kodesh Baruch Hu wants you to work in Torah. And not to take it lightly and not to relax, but to apply yourself. And the word lasok captures the work ethic. One of the things that I know there are a lot of people listening who are Talmidim of Yeshiva and Har Etzion, or Talmidot of Migdal Oz, or you've heard about Rav Lichtenstein. One of the aspects of Rav Lichtenstein's personality that was just so inspiring and riveting to the Talmidim was how hard he worked in Torah. The legend was that in his prime, when he was at full strength, he would sleep a few hours a night. And this is not just said about Rav Lichtenstein, it's said about anyone who wants to succeed in Talmud Torah. Towards the end of his life, when he was ill and it was physically difficult, we literally saw the physical toil and the physical struggle. And the truth is, the amelus in Torah, the work in Torah, is not only physical, it's also emotional, psychological, to know that basically, at any point in your life, here's a very harsh statement, and I see that there are a lot of boys here, a lot of girls here, so this is a normative statement for boys, and certainly a relevant statement for girls, but certainly normative. Every single boy lives every single minute of his life obligated to learn Torah with every single minute you have available. And any other pursuit that you're not committing to Talmud Torah has to be justified. Now, different people have different levels. I turned off the screen share for a second, Arrow, just to see, but I'm going back and forth. Every man has a chiyuv to learn Torah, kafi kocho, v'chal avavcha, v'chal nafshecha, v'chal miyodecha. Women don't have that normative responsibility. Baruch Hashem, today we've extended meaningful Torah learning to women as well. But every boy has to cater a life that at least acknowledges the responsibility of Torah. That's not just a physical toll. That's also a mental weight that, you know, you have to be learning Torah and your time has to be justified. If you're not justifying your time, either in a minute sense, they say that the Vilna Gaon was shaking on his deathbed. Why was the Vilna Gaon shaking on his deathbed, they asked him? Because if you remember, I think 20 years earlier, he had wasted 20 seconds of Talmud Torah. So I know we all can't be the Vilna Gaon. We all can't sit there and micromanage our time down to the second, but just a lifestyle that's cognizant of the chiyuv of Talmud Torah, that takes Talmud Torah, the professions you choose, the lifestyles you construct, the balance between Talmud Torah during your free time and entertainment during your free time. And again, women don't have that yoke, don't have that burden, they only have that option and that meaningful encounter with the word of Torah, Baruch Hashem, especially in today's day and age. If you take a look at Parshas Vayechi, so Yisachar, which was a shevet that was very committed to Talmud Torah, is compared to a big-boned donkey. Yisachar chamar garem rovetz bet ha-mishpesayim. It's compared to a donkey. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, source number 7, says learning Torah is very donkey-like and it's also very ox-like. What's the difference between a donkey and an ox? Source number 7, Tana Devar Eliyahu, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Liolam yasim adam atzma al divrei Torah kishor le'ol v'kechamor le'masoi. A person should be like an ox that has a yoke around his neck and a donkey that has a weight on its back. Now, why do Chazal duplicate a donkey and an ox? What does an ox convey that a donkey doesn't convey? And what does a donkey convey that an ox doesn't convey? Chazal were very careful with their language. And in fact, Yaakov Avinu, in the Pasuk in Vayechi, Sura 6, didn't talk about a shor, he talked about a donkey. So why do Chazal add a shor? So the answer is partially as follows. There are many differences between the weight that a chamor bears and the yoke that a shor bears. But one of the differences is that a donkey works very, very hard while it's in the process. So to carry a heavy weight from point A to point B, which donkeys are normally drafted for, the donkey sweats and works and effort and toil, and then the weight is lifted from the donkey and the donkey rests. You carry a weight from point A to point B, and then the donkey relaxes. A shor generally isn't involved in carrying large weights from point A to point B. A shor is generally involved in lighter activity, but it's more consistent in plowing, in a stone mill in the ancient days. And it always has a yoke around its neck because you're using the force of the shor, and you'll be using the ox for many hours at a time. It's not just point-to-point activity. It's having this yoke around your neck and having that sense, tick-tock, 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 that time is wasting. And when you use you want to use your time properly. So in order to capture the physical toll of Talmud Torah, Chazal employed the imagery or the metaphor of a donkey. In order to capture the emotional, psychological toll, to know that you lived your life commanded, that we were not placed on this earth to live life free and unrestrained, and every once in a while pay homage or pay tribute to religion, but that the definition of a religious person is a mitzvah v'yosa, and that the apex of mitzvah v'yosa is Talmud Torah, because it's not just from time to time, but it's constant. And as much energy as you can muster, that's a psychological toll. That's an emotional toll. That's an attitudinal weight that the ox captures that the donkey doesn't capture. So on the one hand, the word lasok b'divrei Torah reminds us that Torah is not something to be engaged in lightly, morally, or intellectually. On the other hand, the shift from the word lilmo Torah to the word lasok b'divrei Torah, the bracha could have been lil motara. Lasak v'divrei Torah means, and in many ways this is antithetical to the first statement, that even when you're not studying Torah, if you're involved in a Torah approach, in a Torah lifestyle, that can be seen as an extension of Talmud Torah. You may not be lil motara, but you're lasak v'divrei Torah. You're trying to take Torah values and live them and inspire them and display them. So you may not be a lil motara, but you may be called a Lasok b'divrei Torah. This is the subject of a very, very interesting and even famous Tosfos in Brachos. Tosfos in Brachos asks the following question. With every mitzvah, we recite a bracha and we reiterate the bracha if there's been a disruption to the continuity of the mitzvah. So for example, if you enter the sukkah, if you remain in the sukkah for a couple hours, one bracha suffices. But if you were to leave the sukkah for an extended period, which would be mafsik the mitzvah, which would interrupt the continuity of the first mitzvah, you'd recite a second bracha upon returning to the sukkah. The same thing with tzitzis. If you take your tzitzis off for certain reasons, via taking a shower, you got certain reasons you have to make a bracha when you put the tzitzis back on. So why is Tara one bracha a day? If this is a berachas mitzvah on Tara, we should recite a berachas Tara every time we start learning. Source number 9, a very famous Tosfos in Brachos. Again, with the laws of tzitzis, please look carefully into the laws of when you make a new bracha. It depends on why you take them off, how long you take them off. Source number 9, V'im Tamar. Maishna misukah, shetzarech levarach al kol su'udi v'su'udi leshei basukah. Person sits in the sukkah, he has to recite a bracha every time he returns to the sukkah. Yatara, source number 9, one bracha suffices. So now we're line number, top of line number 1. V'yei shlomar, deshani tara. Tara learning is different. She'ino miyayesh daito. You never fully disengage from it. D'chol shah d'mechoyev l'umod. You have to learn Tara every minute. D'chzev agizah b'yam v'layla. It's like you're constantly learning Torah. So this Tosfos is meant to be read in two ways. Number one, you're always pining to get back to the Beis Medrash. You're always pining to get back to that Sefer. You're never miyayish daito. You're always chayiv to learn Torah. So even though physically and practically you've ceased your Talmud Torah, at least mentally and emotionally you're still engaged in the mitzvah. You're waiting for the mitzvah. You're attuned to the mitzvah. And the second way, and the complementary way to read Tosfos is, even when you're not physically learning, even when you're not sitting in front of a sefer, you want to be living a life that's in sync with Torah. You never want to walk out of Torah. You want to maybe walk away from a sefer, but you want to make sure Shavisi Hashem Lenegdi Samed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is constantly there. So that's why Lasot Medivrei Torah ironically captures two very different definitions of Talmud Torah. On the one hand, it captures the austerity of how hard and how much commitment and how much effort and how much amelus in Torah and how challenging Talmud Torah is. On the other end, it captures the fact that not everyone will be zocha to that. It's something to aspire to. It's something that people of great commitment and great stamina and great energy can commit their lives to. Not everyone can commit their life to endless Talmud Torah, but everyone should commit their life to extending Torah's values to the full fabric of human experience. So even when you walk away from a sefer, how will you speak? How will you conduct yourself at work? How will you conduct yourself in public? How will you conduct yourself with your family? You know, there's a lot of quarantining, a lot of family time. That's also part of being an Oved Hashem, to excel at the relationships with people in your family. People sometimes say, what's my best, you know, what's good advice for corona quarantine? So it's a lot of advice, and it's obviously not the topic of today's shiur, but relationships are part of being a good Oved Hashem. So be a good son or a good daughter, a good sister, a good brother, not just because you want to be a good brother because you love your family members, but even when it becomes taxing and you lose your tolerance and you feel like you're being pushed over the brink, because that's when you have to be a good sibling, child, grandchild, because that's part of your Avodas Hashem. Hashem wants you to excel in those relationships, and that's part of your Talmud Torah, is to apply your Torah. So the shift from Lilmo Torah to Lasok B'Divrei Torah captures two different poles. One pole, the toil, the effort, the indomitability, the indefatigability, and really to accomplish anything in Torah, you have to work really, really hard. I just stepped out of the Beis Medrash a couple of minutes ago, and I turned to these fourth-year boys who just came back from the army, said, Rebbe, this is a really, really hard sugya we're learning. I said, yeah, I know it is. It's a hard sugya, but you have to work at it. I know myself. I'm working very hard at the sugyas also. I've learned them 2-3 times, and I know myself that when I reach a sugya, unless I'm willing to put forth maximum effort, I'll be lost. I'll just be tossed around in the variables. I have to really engage in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah and stay up late or focus my mind and really try to get down to the core. On the other hand, recognizing this will not always be available to everyone, so Lasak V'Divrei Torah stretches and creates an elasticity of Torah beyond the Torah experience proper. Part of that elasticity of Torah is expressed not just in when you leave Torah and when you close the sefer and enter the non-Torah, I don't want to say real world because it just feels like the real world, but it's not the real world. When you get to Olam Haba, you'll realize that Torah is the real world and everything you thought was the real world was transient and passing and ephemeral. So never get caught in those mind traps, the real world. It's not the real world, it's a fake world that presents itself as the greatest illusionist in history is the world around us. It presents itself in terms that it isn't. It's ephemeral, but it seems like it's very material and concrete and long-lasting. Another way to express it is even when you're learning Torah. What I mean even when you're learning Torah? Ariel, I'm assuming, I'll open up the mic for a second. I'm assuming you have other shiurim today or this week, right?
Yes, yes, there are.
Right. So, in some ways, it's a big farce. A shiur in this, and a shiur in this, and a shiur in this, and a shiur in that. It's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. What are you skipping around? Would you read philosophy that way? Open a chapter from this book, and a chapter from that book, and a chapter from that book. Or you'd say, let's discuss a topic. Let's really engage very deeply in that topic with consistency and continuity in chapter 1, and chapter 2, and chapter 3. So if you bring that type of intellectual rigor to any field of study, some of you are studying college courses, online courses, I'm sure the professors just jump around randomly and indiscriminately, but there's organization, there's a syllabus. So shouldn't there be a syllabus to Torah? And in the absence of that syllabus, Torah can be seen as very cavalier and very flaky and very nonchalant. So Chazal were aware, again, this may not be the ideal Torah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts whatever Torah is feasible and capable. So there's a beautiful pasuk in Shir HaShirim. In Shir HaShirim, nice Yom Yushalayim pasuk, Haviani al Beis Hayai in source 10, V'diglo alai ahava. Hashem brought me to the house, the cellar of wine, and he placed his flag upon me. Now, the imagery is very rich. Remember, in the literal reading of Shir HaShirim, it's about a male and a female, and the male bringing the female to his wine cellar, which is a place of at least intimacy or friendship, placing the flag over the two of them, some marker that their union has been consummated, has been solidified. In Chazal's world, Beis Hayayin is a reference to Har Sinai. We would deliver Torah, which is compared to Yayin. Why is Torah compared to Yayin? Maybe we'll talk about it in a few moments. And Hashem gave us a flag, the flags that emerged in Sefer Bamidbar. We talked about the flags yesterday in Kriyas HaTorah. But Chazal interpreted the word Diglo as a different reference. But Diglo Alayava, if you play around with the letters, the word Degel, Dalid, Gimel, Lamed, can be reconfigured to mean Dilug, Dalid, Lamed, Gimel. What is the difference between Degel and Dilug? Degel is a flag. Dilug is to skip around. Ledaleg, medaleg al harim. So Adam Yoshev Osik Batara, let's say a person is learning Torah, Source 11, umedaleg mehalacha lalacha. Learns a little here, a little there, goes to this chug, goes to that chug, goes to this zoom shir, goes to that zoom shir. Is that ideal? Ideal is sitting and working through. I know this year in yeshiva, we had a very interesting decision to make. I'll let you in on the decision. I'll let you in a little internal politics. You can't share past this Zoom share, okay? Only the 39 people on this Zoom share will hear internal Yeshiva and Haaretz Yom politics, okay? But I'm watching. I'm seeing where the leak's coming from. See, it was our turn this year, based on our cycle, to learn the eighth parak of Bava Basra. I'm waiting for everyone to shudder. The eighth parak of Bava Basra is one of the hardest prakim to learn and to teach. It's all the laws of Yerusha. If you open up a Gemara Bava Basra, you'll see that many of the pages are very, very small amount of Gemara, because the Rashbam is so large, there's so much to talk about, and the Rishonim, there are some Rishonim in certain circuits that are 6-7 pages long. It's really very difficult to study. And we started our year with Zoom, Shiurim, and also it was difficult, even the boys that were in Yeshiva were sitting behind plastics, and it's really hard conditions. And some of us, I'm not going to tell you whom, recommend that maybe we should learn something a little less taxing, a little bit easier, given the circumstances. I'm not going to say who recommended that, but I've heard someone recommended that. And many of the rabbis disagreed with that decision, and they said, no, we're just going to learn what we're supposed to learn, because we don't want to ever retreat from the complexity and the difficulty and the integrity and the continuity of Torah. It was an interesting conversation, and there are two sides to the question. Well, it gets even better, because I'm friendly with a Rosh Yeshiva in Neri Yisrael. Neri Yisrael is a big yeshiva in Baltimore, in America. And I asked him, what are you learning this summer? I was bored, so we were talking a little bit. He said, he's learning Yesh Nachlas. Oh, great. So tell me which sugya you're learning. So we started from page Kuf Chaf Beis, which is 122, which is where the sugyas get a little bit easier, a little bit more traditional. I said, not in Gush. We started from the beginning, the hardest of the hard. And then I spoke to a Rebbe, who is a Rebbe in Kerem Yavna, a really venerable Hesder Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. I said, what are you learning this summer? I'm learning Yesh Nachalim. I said, great, good to hear yeshivas are still learning the difficult passages. I said, what are you learning? I was the Kuf Chaf Beis, and not in Gush. We're learning Kuf Ches. So sometimes you just have to not skip and power your way through. Those of you who are learning Daf Yomi, you don't get to skip around. You have to learn the easy parts and the difficult parts. And Parshas Nasa will tax you when you want to lunch time, make a vecher targum in ways that Parshas Nitzavim won't. Nasa, 176 Pesukim, a lot of Rashi. So you just push through because every word of Torah is valuable. But not everyone can have that type of integrity and that type of rigor and that type of attitude. Sometimes you need to go to a Zoom shiur and a Zoom shiur and a chug and a conversation about Judaism. And Hashem says, it's all good. Whatever you can muster, whatever you could bring. Let's look back at that drasha. V'diglo alai ava, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, even if you jump around, afilo adam, this isn't the ideal. Yoshev ba'osik batorah, source 11. Umidaleg mehalacha ala halacha. He skips a couple halachas. Let me go, this is too hard for me to go to that halacha. I say, okay, I can't really learn that. That's too hard. Let me find something I can learn. Mipasik lapasik. Okay, it's now Parshas Nasa. It's too hard for me. I can't learn all the laws of Mitzorah. Who can learn Mitzorah? Different colors. I like Acharemos. It's Yom Kippur stuff. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chaviv hu alai. I love that person. V'diklo alai ahava. Don't read that my flag upon him shows love, but the lugo alai ahava. Even if he's skipping around, I still love that person and their commitment to Talmud Torah. So lasak v'divrei Torah is an interesting irony. It's a double entendre. And whenever you have an irony in Talmud Torah, that represents the truth, because our relationship with Torah is our interface with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that will never be simple. That will never be black and white. That will never be monochromatic, because it's an uneven relationship, ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And whatever interface we try to construct between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be riddled with dilemma and with paradox. And that means that we're just trying to bridge between ourselves and a being who's very, very different from us. So Lasek B'Divrei Torah says, you want to study HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah? It's eternal, it's infinite, it's sweeping. You should do nothing else with your time, because nothing else even begins to be as worthwhile as Torah. And if you want to understand that wisdom, you have to be completely desperate and relentless in committing to it, and lasok and work and don't sleep and push yourself and accept the mental toll. And then the other part of the pasuk says, yes, but not every human being will have those capabilities. So therefore, lasok says, even if you're not learning all day, as long as you're applying the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then at least you're not interrupting your Talmud Torah. Then as long as you go back to a sefer at your first availability, rather than closing the sefer for chas v'shalom days or weeks, and you try to return to a sefer. And then even when you learn the sefer, even if you don't learn it in the way that represents the full discipline that's due Torah, even if you skip around, lasok b'divrei Torah captures that. Okay? So that's the first bracha of lasok b'divrei Torah. Now when Mirtashen, every morning when you make the bracha, men and women make the bracha also. So try to think about, are you going to work that day in Torah? I know sometimes I think about, will I be able to work today in Talmud Torah? And also think about, will I be able to not just work in Talmud Torah, but apply myself to Torah? And especially for some of the people here that I'm sure are involved in Bnei Akiva, I think another aspect of Lasok B'Divrei Torah would mean just to support Torah. I think Lasok, the word Asik, doesn't just mean applying Torah's values, but to be an askan and to help Torah and to be involved in Torah. Certainly, I know that in your communities, a lot of the challenge is not just how many man hours or women hours are going to be spent learning Torah, but what people's attitude towards Torah will be. Sometimes people have antipathy towards Torah, bad associations with Torah. Can you change that? Sometimes it's not hostility or discriminatory views towards Torah. It's just based on the culture. Torah is seen as a sideline to identity, real identities, whatever else the culture demands, whatever else the culture obsesses people with. Can you put Torah from the back burner to the front burner? Can you let people know that Talmud Torah is really important? And we can't construct a community without Torah at its center. And there's no excuse for Bnei Akiva. I said this a couple of years ago. I think I was speaking in Sydney. But I'll say this. I imagine this is both for Sydney and Melbourne, right? It's not just for Melbourne, right? Ariel, is it for both Sydney and Melbourne? Anyone from Sydney there?
Yeah, all Australia has been invited.
Okay. In my opinion, I know you guys are Madrichim, I'm taking the jack out, so I can hear you. There is no excuse whatsoever that every single Bnei Akiva event should not have a real, solid Devar Torah as part of the event. It should be a shame to run an event without Torah. Okay, the event has to be fun, and the event has to be social and creative, but based on the group there, has to be a Devar Torah. And it shouldn't be a joke, let's just get past the Devar Torah so we get onto the food, into the pizza, into the TV. No, it should be something taken seriously. And if you take it seriously as Madrichim, and the kids will take it seriously. If they see you blinking your eyes, let's get on with it, and the real event's going to start, then they won't take it seriously either because they're taking their cues from you. So it should be somebody at the forefront, because whatever B'nai Akiva stands for, it's Torah and. There's no excuse for a Jewish organization if it isn't ordinated that way. Torah and. If it's something else, it could be Torah and Torah. That's also a legitimate organization. But it can't be anything equated to Torah. And you have to really set this example for your, and I'll talk about this a little bit later. Okay, so that's the first bracha of Birchas HaTorah. The second bracha of Birchas HaTorah is the most extended bracha, V'harivna Hashem Elokeinu, Es divei teretzcha b'fino v'fiyamcha b'es Yisrael, v'nei anachnu v'tzetzainu, k'lenu yodei shemecha. Let's talk about a couple ideas. First of all, the beginning of the bracha is V'harivna. V'harivna evokes many different ideas, arevus, lateral responsibility to others, but the simple reading of V'hariv means it should be sweet. V'arva l'ashem minchas yudah v'yushalayim kimei alam u'chshanim kadmanios. So first of all, Torah is hard. Torah is difficult. But at some point it becomes sweet. Now I can't tell you when, nor can I tell you how. I can only tell you that. And I can also tell you it doesn't really transition. It remains both. Torah is hard. And I joke a lot when people say, when will I start to love Torah? So you probably will never love Torah because you've been hotwired to love relaxing, entertainment, brides, barbecues, trips, sports, movies. So you've just been hotwired that way, and it's really hard to change your wiring. You may be finding Torah very meaningful, and you may segue into the type of life in which you're more attracted to meaning than you are to fun. Those of you who have binged on every single Netflix series out there, you're probably very, very fit. You're probably overdosed with fun, and you realize, okay, now what meaning have I gathered from all those series that I've binged upon? Maybe make a list today, okay, and be honest with yourself, because if you're looking for meaning in a series, you'll find meaning, really deep meaning, like meaning that change your world and change your mind and change your perspective. Like, which of all the shows you've watched over the last 90 days, what has really made an impact? And here's the Shakespeare challenge. Just go over to a Shakespeare book and open any indiscriminate page, and you'll get five times as much meaning than all the movies you've watched together. That I can promise you. Certainly, if you read Torah, you'll get a lot more lahavta. So, yeah, it's nice to have entertainment in your life, but too much entertainment leaves you very vapid, very empty. So, at some point, it's not just about falling in love with Torah, but at some point, it's changing whom you are and saying, I may not love because I've been taught to love relaxing entertainment and fun, but maybe I can structure my life more around meaning and therefore be very excited when I'm engaged in experiences which are meaningful, which change who I am, which give me new values, new insights, new thoughts, new perspectives, new relationships, new identity, new, that really changed the fabric of how I live my day-to-day experience. And that's a transition that you need to spend a lot of time, and I think a lot of people that don't learn Torah, it's because they don't find it enjoyable at any level, either fun or meaningful, and then they give up. And it's just the nature of Torah that you have to apply yourself for just a long time. And the Shir Chazal talk about at least 5 years based on Parshas Balosra, where the Levim had to train for 5 years. So if anyone has been trying to learn for 5 years and hasn't been successful, so we can talk about it. There still may be solutions. But until you really apply yourself for 5 years to Talmud Torah, because it's so difficult, because it's the Ratzon Hashem, you're not going to really find that much pleasure. And certainly it's long-term, and anything long-term needs vision and needs trust. You can either max out in life in short-term accomplishments because you're very dependent upon feedback, and not just feedback from others, but a sense of accomplishments. And unless that accomplishment comes, it's hard to generate motivation. Or you can work on longer-term goals. Longer-term goals bring less immediate satisfaction, and the motivation has to be more internal. You're motivated because you sense that over the long period, you'll accomplish great things if you have stick-to-itiveness and persistence. So people that accomplish great things need to take long-term projects, and long-term projects aren't going to provide immediate kickback, immediate feedback. So there's a transitioning from the Torah that's lasok b'divrei Torah in the first bracha to the v'harivna Hashem Elokeinu, as divrei teretzcha b'fino, that Hashem, please let me find that harivna. Let me find, as we say in davening on Shabbos, hanechamadim mizav mipazrav, which speaks about how valuable Torah is, source number 13, but also umesukim midvash, how sweet Torah is, how tasty Torah is meant to be. In the older cheders in Europe, you still have it today in Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure if it's practiced as much in Melbourne, but when kids begin to learn how to read, so there's a Tanakh party. And at the Tanakh party, each child is given their own Tanakh. So at least in my kids' school, which I think is a beautiful custom, they all come and they dip the Tanakh in honey or something, or the letters in honey, and the kids come and taste the honey from the letters, and there's an immediate association between Torah and something that's meant to be sweet. And you'd be surprised how deep and visceral these associations can be, both for positive associations and negative associations. There is a pastor in America, a very well-known pastor. I think he passed away recently. His name was Billy Graham. He was the pastor to all the celebrities. He was the pastor that the presidents would consult with. He was a Christian pastor. And he told the story that in the 30s, he and his friends out in the rural America went out drinking and got drunk. And when he came home, his father was so incensed that his father took all the children to the back and force-fed them as much liquor as their bodies could hold till they started throwing up from the liquor. And he says it created such a negative and toxic association with liquor and with alcohol that he never drank again, never had a taste to drink again because it was so offensive to him. Because whenever he saw beer, whenever he saw wine, he associated it with vomit and just couldn't tolerate it. So associations are very deep. And even when we're young, we can create very strong. Think about your earliest associations. What's the earliest things you remember? You mostly hear about 20, 22, 23, 24. See, there's some adults joining us. Think now to yourself, what are the earliest associations you have, some of the earliest memories, and how those associations shape your experiences even to this day, and they'll continue to shape your experiences. So we hope that Torah can be sweet, and not only that, we want it to be sweet. There's a very interesting sefer written in the 19th century called the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer was written by the Sachat Shava Rebbe, a Hasidish Rebbe, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. For those of you who have read the Minchas Chinuch, I would compare the Avnei Nezer to the Minchas Chinuch on Hilchas Shabbos. He goes through all the Melachos, and it's an encyclopedia of all the logic and analysis relating to those Melachos. So people that really want to learn Shabbos, they learn the Sefer called the Avnei Nezer. Okay, the Sefer with the Avnei Nezer is on Shulchan Aruch. The Sefer on Shabbos, I'm sorry, is called the Iglei Tal. So the Iglei Tal was written by the same person who wrote the Avnei Nezer. Now, in his introduction to the Iglei Tal, which is his smaller Sefer on Shabbos, he has a polemical defense because many people said you shouldn't enjoy learning Torah. Because if you enjoy learning Torah, you take away from the piety and the reverence. You should be sitting and learning Torah with fear, with reverence, with gravitas. How could you enjoy learning Torah? And he defends and says, well, joy is one of the deepest experiences known to human beings. And if you want to remember Torah, it's because we want to associate it with joy. We try to remember things that make us happy, and we try to suppress experiences that make us sad or that hurt us. We try to anesthetize ourselves or cauterize our nerve. And not only in terms of memory, but in terms of making Torah visceral. Joy is one of the deepest emotions. And people who are happy in life have deep emotional lives. People who are sad have a lot of suppression. So if you want Torah to be learned, not just with long-term enduring memory, but to be learned at the depths of your identity, then you should really be trying to appreciate and to enjoy Torah. And of course, one of the psukim that many are familiar with, it's a pasuk, David HaMelech, in Kuf Yutes of Tehillim. He has 8 psukim for each letter of the Aleph Beis. So he writes, Lule Tarascha Shashuai, Azavada Tivioni, source number 14. He calls Torah Shashuai. Shashuai means a toy. Very, very provocative way to refer to Torah as a toy. But what would a toy be? So I don't know. I guess most of you probably are of the age where you remember the spinners. Remember the spinners? Everyone was walking around with the spinners. So you didn't really enjoy it. It was just something you were dibbling and dabbling with. A couple, 15 years ago, slinkies. Everyone was walking around the basement with a slinky. Or in yeshiva, you have these arm pumps that you... Just little things you hold on to. So you don't really focus on, even when you're not focusing on, it's still part of your experience. And Torah, the people that are so deeply immersed in Torah, not just when they're learning Torah, but when they're joking and when they're talking and phraseology. And I do a lot of interviews for the yeshiva in America to see who gets into yeshiva, who doesn't get into the yeshiva. You guys are lucky that I don't do it in Australia. None of you would have gotten in. Anyway, so I, and you know who you are. So I actually did interviews for the yeshiva, and sometimes I can feel a boy, I do interviews probably more for boys than for girls, that grew up in a house of Torah, and I'll talk about this in a few moments. Because despite whatever level of learning they may or may not exhibit, I just hear in their language, they've heard a lot of Torah, they've heard a lot of phrases, and it's part of their blood, it's part of their conversation. I'll talk about this in a few moments. So when we say v'harivna, we're not just hoping that Torah becomes sweet and delicious and attractive, but when it does become that, it will occupy a deeper part of our identity, deeper part of our soul. And that's really the challenge. It's not just the challenge of volume, how many hours you'll learn, although it starts that way. Part of the challenge is, and I can't really deconstruct identity for you, because everyone has a different identity, but you really have to ask yourself a very existential question. Is it really deeply embedded in my blood? Am I really learning Torah because I see this as eternal, I see this as the word of Hashem, I value it, I want to hold on to it, I want it to be meaningful, I want it to shape my life? Or I'll just use an antonym, just by way of contrast, it's just a cultural experience. I'm learning about my culture. If I were a Hindu, I'd read, if a Buddhist, if I were an Indian, if I were an, I just want to read about my culture. Or you feel this is an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you take efforts to understand and to persevere and to deeply assimilate and to try to find the meaning and to apply that meaning, and it's a very different encounter. And if you enjoy it, you'll see it's easier if you really enjoy Torah, or if you enjoy the meaning that you feel Torah is providing. So that's why these brachas are so important, because they can set tonality and set expectation. And even if you don't think about all these, I have to be honest, I don't think about all these ideas every time I say brachas Torah, but different types of ideas flash through my mind at different points when I say these brachas Torah. Now, the second bracha also talks about children. V'harivna Hashem Elokeinu, as divrei Torascha b'finu b'fiyamcha beis Yisrael, go back to the beginning of this shir. And it talks about teaching your children Torah. Now, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah isn't actually written by the Torah. It's an interesting anomaly. You'd think that if there's one mitzvah that the Torah would articulate very clearly, it's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Yet the Torah never says learn Torah. The Torah says teach Torah. V'shinantam levonecha v'dibar tabam, which is where we derive the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. There are many reasons for this anomaly, many of which I won't share now, but the primary reason is to stress the importance of a father teaching a child. And of course, in our day, a mother teaching a child, even though she's not commanded to. Now, that is a seismic change or apocalyptic difference from the world we have. Let me try to capture it for you in an interesting Gemara which Rav Lichtenstein would share with us from time to time. The Gemara in Bavar Basra says, Baram, source number 15, Zachar Oso Ha'ish Letov V'Yeshua Ben Gamla Shemo. The Gemara extols a man named Yeshua Ben Gamla. And I'll paraphrase, you're all welcome to read the Gemara on your own. But the Gemara says that basically, initially, every parent would teach their son. Father would teach his son. But then at certain points, parents couldn't teach their children anymore. Not every father knew Torah. Line number 3 of the Gemara, if you're looking at the source, is Kinushim Moshivim Lamni Tanokas V'Yushalayim. So then he said, okay, let's make Bate Medrash in Yushalayim and everyone come to Yushalayim to learn Torah. And that worked for a while. But then people that couldn't go to Yushalayim or didn't have a father, so he said, let's make schools in Bate Medrash in every city, in every location. So this is the first institutionalization of Talmud Torah. And by institutionalization, Talmud Torah was spread more broadly. Schools, youth groups, camps, yeshivos, rebbes. Rav Aaron said there's also a certain tragedy to this. Because there's a certain beauty and command and internalization that Torah receives when it's studied at home. You read the wikis of Gedolim, or the biographies of Gedolim, more or less the common thread by people who really accomplish in Torah is that they learned Torah with their father, with their grandfather, at a very young age that was sent to. Most of us, we started learning Torah at 6 years old in a classroom with 30 people sitting next to us for an hour, 2 hours, however many times you learn. It's not a question of volume. But We didn't learn it with the same degree of integration. It wasn't when we were sitting around the table with our parents, we weren't talking about Torah. They're talking about sports and politics and culture. Rabbi Soloveitchik was sitting around the table with his father at the age of 3 talking about Torah logic. So it wasn't just the volume of Torah that he acquired, it was just the immersion of Torah, what level it occupied in his emotional world. It was deeply, deeply, deeply embedded. I always joke with people, no one's going to get this reference. I don't know, maybe there's some older people here listening. I'm 54 years old, and when I was young, there was a cartoon that I enjoyed watching called about a gorilla, talking gorilla. And the gorilla's name was Megilla Gorilla. That was the gorilla's name. And he had a girlfriend called Matilda Gorilla. So it's Megilla Gorilla and Matilda Gorilla were running around finding mischief. So I always joke, why did I never become a gadol in Torah? Because when I was Soloveitchik was young, he was discussing Maseches Megillah. When I was young, I was watching Megillah Gorilla. So I would have been reading Maseches Megillah instead of Megillah Gorilla. Maybe it would have been a little bit easier for me to accomplish in Torah. But that's a big difference. Now, here's a really big challenge for all of you. Because I see most of you are in the process of forming your identity and growing into the adults you'll become. And Mirth Hashem, part of that will be starting your homes and finding people with whom to start your homes. It's important to have schools. It's important to have rebbes. It's important to have yeshivos. It's important to support yeshivos. But just know that it's a bidyeved. You're subcontracting the education of your children to other people. Our world doesn't really allow, because of the pressures, because of the distractions, we have to institutionalize the same way Yeshua ben Gamla did. But two things. Number one, and these are important changes in our community. The level of support, I don't just mean financial support, I mean ideological support that you as parents should give your children's teachers should be close to 100%. There's a lot sometimes of friction that breaks out between parents and teachers, and you have to appreciate how, and I'm not talking in a way that's self-fulfilling or self-down, I don't know most of you, I'm not your teacher, it's not like I teach in the local schools or anything, but if you really value Torah, and you see this as your responsibility that you can't dispatch, and the level of hakaras hatov and gratitude and support you have for the people that are teaching your children Torah. And even if you disagree with a particular point or a particular approach or particular, don't be quick to register your disapproval. First of all, it's very subversive. Because if your children one day will be looking for ways to escape the message of their teachers and rebel against their teachers, all they need is to hear their parents discount or disparage something the teacher says, then it gives them carte blanche. They say, well, my parents make fun of the teachers, my parents disparage the teachers, so why should I even begin to listen? And remember, kids are 10 years old, 11 years old, they're not sophisticated enough to discriminate between your comments and their rebellion. Then they say, look, you know, like you walk into shul and you see a person talking in shul, you think it's a big tzaddik, oh, that person's talking shul, I could be over in a gear, I can not come. Like, you're basically always looking for ways to justify your own behavior, even though those justifications are hyperbolic or they're not necessarily equitable to what you see. So it's really important to be a supportive voice for the Torah personalities, the rabbis and the teachers. But second of all, you have to be the mechanech of your children. Now, even if that doesn't come across in hours and volumes and hours of learning, the basics of emunah and the basics of avas haTorah and the basics of shmiras halacha, if those aren't supported in the home, it's going to be really hard to be inculcated in the classroom. So if you're asking yourself, Erev Shavuos, Tav Shin Pei, okay, I'm not on track to be a Rebbe, I'm not on track to be a teacher, I'm not on track, I've chosen something else. What role does Torah play in my life? Why should I spend time studying Torah? So first of all, that question doesn't need an answer. Torah doesn't ever have to be justified because it serves anything else. If you had a minute left to live, then of course you do nothing more than study Torah because it wouldn't serve any purpose, but what else could have inherent purpose? When you get to Shemaim, you realize that nothing you pursued in this world had any long-term purpose. That means you shouldn't pursue it. Torah has its own purpose. But if you are looking for practical ramifications, how will my gains in Torah affect my life? Well, what type of home do you want your kids to grow up in? I remember I once asked Rav Amital, another rabbi of mine, I was in my early 30s or late 20s, and I said, Rebbe, I can imagine training all my children. One of my girls just had a girl, So my granddaughter over Shabbos is getting, I think, a lot about raising her, and Baruch Hashem, she's a great, great person. And I asked her, Amital Rebbe, how can I teach my kids Avas HaTorah? You can teach them skills, but how do you give them Avas HaTorah? So Rav Amital raised his index finger. Whenever he thought a question was simplistic, he would whisk it away by saying, Shtuyot, Shtuyot, Shtuyot. He says, if they see you get excited about Torah, they'll be excited about Torah. If they see you're not so excited about Talmud Torah, kids see through you. You see through your parents, right? You know who your parents are. You're not 12 years old anymore. You don't idolize your parents. You see your parents are the real people they are. You live with them. You spent a lot of time with them. You know them pretty well. You know exactly whom they are. So if you see them getting excited about the latest package to arrive, or the sports event, or the movie, or the social event, or whatever else excites people, and then Torah is something, even if you study Torah, it's begrudging, okay, we have to, now we have to, that's going to trickle down. People are going to realize that. So here's your chance to determine the type of father or mother you'll be starting in the next couple years and Amir Tzashem going forward. And of course, what type of grandfather and grandmother you'll be when that time comes as a Tzashem. And those are the voices. Think about the voices inside of your heads. What are the voices inside of your heads about religion, about, those are their parents' voices, the comments you've heard, the statements you've heard. So you put voices inside of people's heads, and those are the voices they live with their whole lives. So what types of voices do you want to be inserting or implanting in the people's heads, especially about Torah? So when you say, V'arev na Hashem lokeinu estibri terascha befinu v'yem chabe Yisrael v'ne'anachnu tzatzayinu v'tzatzayam chabe Yisrael, just remember, you're teaching your children, tzatzay, tzatzayinu, some of yourselves actually mentioned grandchildren, and that's a real practical difference. As to what type of, do you want to be an ignoramus? Do you want to be someone that knows Torah? You're going to be sitting around, and every time there's a halachic shayla, you don't even know the first basics of that shayla, and then something's even mockable. Who cares? Who cares about Shabbos? Or you say, look, even at the very least, even if you don't know halachic Shabbos, you know that halachic experience has to be taken very seriously. And worse than under-asking is over-asking. You don't want to be obsessive about asking, obviously. Not everything has to be asked. But it is a choice between asking too much and asking too little. When you ask too much. My wife taught me this lesson this morning. I was working on something in the basement Thursday night, preparing for the baby to come to our house, and a heavy, heavy rock fell on my head. So if some of my comments today are discombobulated, it's because I probably suffered a concussion Thursday night. So my head's been hurting me for the last couple of days. And I woke up this morning and said, I'm still a little dizzy. What should I do? So my wife said, call the doctor. I said, but it's 3 days already. Why should I call the doctor? I'll just wait it out. I'll tough it out. Whatever. I'll take some aspirin. I said, no. You want to, when it comes to brain, you want to ask the doctor, over-ask. Okay, if, you know, you feel bad, especially during corona, constantly pestering the doctor. Another question. So what's that? We actually called during the shir, so I'll get back to him after the shir. So I'll try to find out what the story is. But when it comes to health, and when somebody comes to halacha, you want to over-ask. You don't want to under-ask. Again, you have to know what to ask and what not to ask and how to ask the question. So let me just finish this bracha, then I'll get to some of the questions we had. The bracha ends, says, V'einu v'tzatzeyam chabeisiso kulana yodei shemecha v'lomdei sarasecha lishma, which reminds us that we want to try to ensure that our Torah will be studied lishma. There's a famous machlokas in the 19th century between two great luminaries about what Lishma should be. The Hasidim, and a lot of this is embedded in the Sefer HaTanya, I'm sure some of you have been exposed to Sefer HaTanya, felt that Lishma is L'Shem Devekos, that when you study Torah, you want to cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when you're studying Torah, you want to feel Hashem's presence. Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the head of the Volozhiner Yeshiva, said, well, that's not the way you get close to Hashem, because if you want to understand a Gemara, you have to put every fiber of your energy and being into understanding that Gemara. If you're thinking about Hashem, you're not thinking about the Tosfos, you're not thinking about the logic, you're not thinking about, and if you're thinking about Hashem on your terms, that's not as direct as thinking about Hashem on His terms. That's why philosophy is always second fiddle to Gemara, because philosophy is an attempt to describe Hashem in human conventions. It may be helpful, it may not be helpful, but it's always flawed, because human terms can't capture Hashem. But Torah is Hashem's revealed will. So every word of Torah you study, you're hearing Hashem speak to you. So why, Reb Chaim Volozhiner said, should you think about Hashem when you're studying Torah? Should you think about the Torah, and that should be your conduit, that should be your interface with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I think both are legitimate. And it depends upon which Torah you study. In some Torah, you need less mental investment. When you read it, let's say, a pasuk in Tanakh, you read it, you understand it, and somehow you're thinking about what's Hashem's voice in this pasuk. And then to understand a sugya of a Gemara, you need to spend 15 hours sometimes just to even begin to make headway and to organize all the variables. But for sure, you're seeing a deeper level of Hashem. You're not just seeing a generalized pasuk. You're seeing deep, deep mapping of Hashem's will, of Hashem's ratzon as it applies to a particular aspect of the human condition. And each is appropriate as long as you remind yourself you're trying to find the word of Hashem. For some people, I want to feel Hashem's presence more immediately. For some people, I don't want that immediacy because that'll be simplistic and I want it to be deeper and not as shallow. But either way, you always have to remind yourself, can I find that Kadosh Baruch Hu? And for some, will be more experiential. Some will be more intellectual. This is Hashem's will, and I feel glad to know more of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. But Torah Lishma doesn't just mean the opposite of Torah Shelo Lishma. Obviously, we never want to study Torah Shelo Lishma for profit, for egotism, for people to know whom you are, for reputation, to be seen as a Talmud Chacham. That's Torah Shelo Lishma. But Torah Lishma is not just the absence of polluting or contaminating elements. It's also trying to feel that you're sitting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the room and to know that behind every word of Torah is Hashem's will. So we daven that we should be Yodei Shemecha Velomdei Sarasecha Lishma Baruch Ata Hashem Hamalameid Torah Liyamo Yisrael. We think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in many different ways. He's our father. He's our melech. He's our husband. He's actually our mother. I talked about this 2 weeks ago in America was Mother's Day. There's actually a parak in Tehillim that equates Hashem to a mother. So you can look in for that shiur in Wayutara. Or you mothers or people who think about motherhood. What is that? Why is Hashem a mother? What does that mean? But one of Hashem's identities is that he teaches us Torah. He's our Rebbe. And sometimes we underestimate that because we think of Torah as a human experience, logic and ration and cognition and applying, and it is. But in every moment, you're not just studying Hashem's will, you're also studying with Hashem. You and Him have a chavrusa. And that is known by a phrase that I'm sure you've thought about a lot in life, but may not have thought a lot about with Talmud Torah. It's called Siyata Dishmaya. And we ask Hashem for a siyat d'shmayim whatever endeavor we start. We also ask Hashem for a siyat d'shmayim when we're learning Torah. And I can only tell you about the countless times I'm sitting in a sugya and I'm racking my brain, I'm at my wit's end, and I feel like I'm banging up against a dead end and I can't pass that wall. I'm working so hard, and then somehow I feel like something parts. And I see something that I wasn't able to see before. And it's not because I thought about it from a different angle or applied more mental energy, but somehow I just feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu has removed the barrier and has afforded me a new insight that I didn't have before. And I won't get there unless I work hard, of course, but I feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu is learning with me, and he's Melame Torah Le'amo Yisrael. He teaches us Torah. So when you think about that second bracha, think about the Harevna, the sweetness. Think about your children, Tzatzainu, Tzatzayamcha Beis Yisrael. Think about Yodei Shemecha Velomdei Sarasecha Lishma. Then finally, think about Melamei Torah Le'amo Yisrael. I know we're bordering on the hour, so I'll just quickly, very, very quickly mention the final bracha, which Rav Hamnuna called the Me'ula Sheva Brachas. This is, he says, of all the three brachas, Rav Hamnuna says in the Gemara in Brachas, this is the choicest bracha, source number 16. Basically, without becoming too extensive, because time is up, talks about that Hashem chose us, and He loves us, and He chose us as His people. And Torah has a message for all mankind and all of humanity. But when mankind over 2,000 years repeatedly display their inability to accept Hashem's will, Hashem had to choose one people. And for all sorts of reasons, He chose the Jewish people. Asher bachar banu mikol amim, v'nasan lanu estaraso, baruch ata Hashem nosein haTorah. And thinking on this year Shavuos about the fact that Hashem chose us is important because, quite frankly, the last couple months have not felt that much chosen because we have suffered a fate similar to all of mankind, and the virus doesn't discriminate between Jew and non-Jew, And the health measures we've taken are universal societal health measures, and Jews endanger or don't follow rules are endangering non-Jews, and non-Jews are endangering Jews. And of course, we're human beings of this planet, and we share common destiny and common experiences with all mankind. And this is highlighting some of those commonalities. But especially Shavuos time, it's so important to remember, Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Amim Venasan Lano Estara. So, how this will land, this pandemic, how will our Bechira and our chosenness emerge in this pandemic, what will it mean long-term for the state of Israel? I can't tell you, I don't have answers to those questions. I can only tell you that even through this, any large world-altering event also shapes human history, but also shapes Jewish history, because Jewish history drives human history. And somehow, in the end of time, we'll see those two arcs, human history and Jewish history, as overlapping. We're starting to see some of it. We're not seeing all of it, but they're not separate arcs. They just feel separate to us, because we don't see enough of it. Okay, but right now, the last 2-3 months, you have felt a lot of the commonality, which is fine and appropriate. We've davened for all of mankind. But sometimes our selection can become a little bit camouflaged when we feel so attuned with the universalism. So as Shavuos is about to start, Hashem bachar banu mikol ha'amim, Hashem chose us and showed us his love at Har Sinai. Okay, let me just answer some of the questions on the chat. Sarah Christel said, how one can foster an experience of Torah's embeddedness while outside of an immersive yeshiva midrash framework. It differs from person to person. I think sometimes the little aspects make a big difference, making brachos with kavana, saying Baruch Hashem, saying Hashem's name as much as possible. I think that in our world sometimes we shy away from those experiences and make Hashem more palpable. We tend to create more abstract, sophisticated versions of religion, but sometimes abstraction creates distance. And more simplistic, not simplistic, but more grounded, simple, direct approaches to make Hashem more vivid. So if you say brachos with kavan, I think that helps. If you say Baruch Hashem, Amir Hashem, more frequently than you do. Obviously, if you are comfortable displaying your Judaism, which you should be in public, wearing a kippah for males, not shying away from letting people know that you're Jewish, I think that can bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. Should we consider the endeavor of Kibush Olam? Only man of faith is meaningful in taking aside from learning. Everything is meaningful, but Torah is eternal. So the balance in life is to determine each person on their own how much of Torah opportunity and potential, which is eternal, they should reroute towards important but non-eternal pursuits. To say in Chazal's terminology, we're all living in a corridor, and we hope one day to get to the palace. In that palace, nothing else will matter aside from Torah, and aside from our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every person has to determine. Some people say, it's just a corridor, why should I pay any attention to the corridor? Some people say, well, if I'm in the corridor, let me try to improve the corridor for other people. As long as you maintain that hierarchy between the palace and the corridor, and all decisions are aligned in recognition of that disparity. Right, we don't only spend time in our life on things that we feel of supreme importance. We spend a lot of time on things that are of lesser importance. But hopefully it doesn't blur or obscure the levels of importance in the things that we evaluate in our life. So you may have to allocate different time, but that shouldn't reshape the evaluation. You should distinguish between allocation and evaluation. Okay. Okay, Shira Cohn asked... A key authenticity issue. Should one be studying more if they're not going to try? I don't know. I think sometimes, you know, there's a great rule in life in general. You have to fake it to make it. And sometimes you go through the reps and then it becomes more internal. And in particular with Talmud Torah, there's something cosmic about it. That when you study Torah, as long as your heart is open, even if you don't know how to translate Torah into religion yet, you're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why there's a famous machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai said that to get into his yeshiva, you needed to meet four criteria. You had to be a wise man, a humble person, a wealthy person, and a pedigreed person. Because otherwise, Torah would be distorted. Wise people would misunderstand Torah. Poor people would prostitute it for profit. Non-pedigree people won't understand its organic nature. They haven't seen it in their home. Arrogant people will reroute Torah for self-aggrandizement. So Beis Shammai says, only if you met these four criteria could you study in his base matters. And Hillel said, let everyone come and learn, because the power of Torah will be transformative. And there's something transformative about Torah that's not logical, but it's because you're immersing with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So you certainly don't want to study Torah for alternative reasons, but if you don't feel it yet, just keep learning and let HaKadosh Baruch Hu try to trigger those feelings. Okay. Okay. Yashar koach to everyone. You should have a Chag Sameach. Yashar koach to Ariel for organizing.